This episode of Game On is brought to you by Ford, featuring Curve Control to help protect against crashes on curves. Look for Curve Control available on the 2013 Ford Taurus, and you can learn more at ford.com/cars/Taurus.
And by Squarespace.com, fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. Make sure to use the offer code GAMEON3 to get 30% off your new account for the next 3 months. That's Game On and the number 3.
It's Sunday, March 18th, and I love Draw Something because I never learned to read. Brian and Veronica discover the ethereal majesty of Journey for PlayStation 3. The Guild and Dr. Horrible star Felicia Day joins us, only to break into spontaneous song if time permits, which it probably won't. We talk to the geniuses behind the new hit mobile game Draw Something and ask them honestly if the Jersey Shore cast spells out the words of their clues. Hey, do you think Diddy Kong and Candy Kong ever made out? Just asking. Ooh, that Candy Kong make me bark like a dog. It's time for Game On!
Back inversion torque. We are on for Game On. I'm Brian Brushwood.
And I am Veronica Belmont. So I see you have your big boy hair on today.
I'm like a grown-up real person.
Like a real person.
Don't get used to it.
So I have to say, they mentioned the Jersey Shore in the intro.
Yes.
And I actually drew a Snooki in Draw Something recently.
You just
and
drew got Snarf from the Thundercats?
I drew just a bright orange, very large dressed
they, and there wasn't enough letters like for Oompa Loompa, so they were like, I guess Snooki? I don't know.
That I actually got it. I was very proud of myself.
That's awesome. Hey, man, so we got a big announcement about Team Fortress 2, right?
We do. People may remember that we actually did a little trial round a few weeks ago on Shut
you
Up
made
and Play.
The cut.
And I don't really play Team Fortress 2 that often, and so I needed some practice because we are doing a big charity event coming up soon. Mixed Match 4.
Yes, actually, the details, there we go. The TF2
mix-up. Mix-up.
We got Notch, Freddie Wong. Freddie W. From YouTube.
Freddie Wong.
We got people who have worked. Evan Lottie from PC Gamer Magazine.
Yeah, in fact, from Valve, people from Bethesda.
This is what a big deal it was. Somebody posted it on the Reddit, and Chad went in to correct it, saying, these people are all too important. This has to
be
a
clearly they don't belong in this group
Brian
of people.
Brian and Veronica are on this group.
But so we're really excited about it. It's for Child's Play, of course, as you mentioned. It's a great charity, and they're taking donations already on the website. So watch me make a fool of myself playing Pyro for, like, hours.
And watch me be credit to team. I'm very excited.
I'm the only girl, too. It's weird.
You could play the Pyro. Legend is Pyro's the girl.
All right. Well, anyway, just a reminder, we record live every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern live, twit.tv. Be sure to tweet reactions to @TwitGameOn. Why? Well, I will tell you. All of our tweets are compiled inside the brain of our producer, OMG Chad.
He's a robot.
He sorts out the funniest, and then he spits them out at the end of the show. It's a real simple process, so don't panic and screw it up.
And don't be lazy. Send him tweets. He needs it. And once we mop up this mess, the party doesn't end. Shut Up and Play. The LAN party for the staff and fans of Game On begins live, and today we're playing Trackmania 2 with a grudge match where we're going to play some You Don't Know Jack.
Now, because you were too busy putting schools with excellent computer science programs into your final four brackets, here's a week's worth of news in the system update.
Ugh. Diablo 3 is back in the news. I bet it's another delay. Or a weird comment from a Blizzard PR guy comparing the game to an M. Night Shyamalan movie. Am I right, Mark Wahlberg?
What? No.
Oh. Well, then it must be actual release date. Yes! Diablo 3 will not only be available to the public on May 15th, but you can pre-order it right freaking now! It'll cost you $59.99 for the standard version or $99.99 for the collector's edition, or you can buy an annual pass to World of Warcraft and get Diablo 3 for free. But beware, that offer ends May 1st.
Is Bethesda ready to announce their rumored Elder Scrolls MMO? Yes, according to TomsGuide.com. It will be called Elder Scrolls Online and will take place 1,000 years before Skyrim. Players will be able to choose from three factions represented by a dragon, a lion, and a bird of prey. The announcement is set for May. Of course, this would be followed up with a presence at E3 in Los Angeles. Well, Fusro duh.
Speaking of E3, it looks like Nintendo will be the belle of the ball as far as hardware is concerned. Microsoft told Kotaku this week that E3 is about all Xbox 360 this year. This follows up on Sony's announcement that there would be no sneak peeks at PlayStation 4 at the massive gaming convention. That leaves Nintendo to play new baby when they're showing off even more of their Wii U console. E3 was already pivotal for Nintendo to wow gamers in advance of the Wii U's winter launch. Now with the decks cleared, the pressure is even higher.
Gaming site Giant Bomb has been acquired by CBS Interactive, along with Comic Vine. It came as part of a massive sell-off from Whiskey Media, which also unloaded three of their sites, Tested, Screened, and Anime Vice, to the Los Angeles-based Berman Braun. CBS has promised to keep the Giant Bomb team together and allow them to operate the site as it has been. However, it will now link back to CBS-owned GameSpot. Bomb was founded by former GameSpotters Jeff Gerstmann and Ryan Davis in 2008. Gerstmann will reportedly now have a larger say in CBS's entire online gaming portfolio, including GameSpot and GameFAQs. Also, here is some random footage of him slow dancing with Brian.
Once you're lucky, twice you're good. Kickstarting dead video game genres with fan money had a big, big week. First, the groundbreaking Double Fine point-and-click adventure project wrapped up with a massive $3,300,000 haul. For context, that surpasses the previous budget of previous Tim Schafer project Grim Fandango, and is far north of the $400,000 they initially asked for. But not to be outdone, Wasteland creator Brian Fargo debuted his own Kickstarter project to fund a sequel to the classic 1988 RPG. His $900,000 pitch has already been answered with over $1 million, and there are still 29 days to go. Man, I loved Wasteland.
I used to play the ever-loving hell out of Wasteland on my 286, and my friend played it on his Commodore 64.
Tell me more.
Dude, it was amazing. Everything you love about Fallout began in Wasteland. And if you ever played Fallout 1 or Fallout 2, in fact, when Fallout 3 was announced, people were complaining because they were getting rid of some of the best parts of the tactical combat. Mm-hmm. This, you know, taking the risk of punching a rad scorpion in the groin versus going for a base hit of hitting the torso. And all of that began with Wasteland. They had this awesome thing. You would queue up your weapons and what moves you wanted to do, and because it used kind of the Bard's Tale engine, it would actually have this narration describing play-by-play what happens using very sparse sound effects. And I tell you, I love the game so much, I played it again in 1998, and I played it again in 2008. I'm so stoked that they're bringing this back.
I'm so surprised, or I'm not surprised, I'm encouraged that the Kickstarter thing is working for people. Like, I kind of had a feeling that maybe Double Fine was a fluke.
Right.
You know, people are just so obsessed with Double Fine and love the games they make so much, and it was kind of the first company to really do this for a video game.
Right.
But now we're seeing a little bit of repeat action, so maybe it is something that's kind of sustainable,
well,
which is awesome.
You can tell that these are labors of love and that the the fans are super, super into it. In fact, actually, Chad, can we roll a bit of the video that they made for the Wasteland 2?
Thanks for meeting with me today.
So you want us to pay for a Wasteland sequel?
Yes.
How old is that game?
It came out in 1988.
I'm pretty sure my mom graduated high school that year.
Fascinating.
Have you been involved with any games I might have heard of?
Have you heard of Bard's Tale?
No.
Fallout?
Can't say I have.
Stonekeep?
Does ring a bell.
How about Dragon Wars?
I got nothing.
Castles?
I like TV show.
Star Trek 25th Anniversary.
With Picard?
No, Kirk.
Then no.
Baldur's Gate.
Blue Gate?
You had to have heard of Battle Chess.
Is it Lunch yet?
Icewind Dale. Neuromancer. Free Space. Kingpin.
Did you do Angry Birds?
Would I f***ing be here if I did Angry Birds? No, it's a completely different genre. It's a role-playing game.
Is it a billion-dollar franchise?
Probably not.
Then I can't help you.
So you're turning down a game that the fans want?
Hey, I'm a publisher.
Ooh, snap!
Well, and here's what's great. You know, obviously, everybody knows that Tim Schafer is just naturally funny, but there is so much heart in the Wasteland 2 thing, and they got 29 days left in the Kickstarter, man. I hope they make $1 billion, and they make it one of the best games of the next couple of years.
I was a little bit worried about the going for the funny video vibe again for the Kickstarter project, but then that kid, man, he blew it out of the water.
Kids,
I loved
it. He followed it straight from the playbook, right?
Some great lines in there. So, Brian played an arty game where he flies through the desert. I lived in my pajamas for 72 hours so I could finish Mass Effect 3. See the fruits of our labor in this week's edition of The Score.
All right, so we're going to start off talking about Journey. Journey, of course, is a PS3 exclusive title, and my buddy John was nice enough to bring over his PS3 because it's a relatively short game. And the biggest thing I took away from Journey, is that the debate is over. Video games can be art. And by art, I mean they can be transcendent with visuals that will haunt you for the rest of your days. They can also be overpriced and boring. But
okay, so where do you think this fits into those categories?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Here's the
interesting
thing.
Interesting.
What they get right is that it has a very satisfying gameplay mechanic. I don't want to spoil anything for you guys. It's kind of fun to discover as you go. But if you look at these visuals, man, you get these incredible sweeping vistas. You feel the loneliness. It's extremely sparse. There's not a single word spoken the entire time. It's about the experience and the visuals that you get there. Now, having said that, there are elements of this that visuals I'll remember forever. When I'm surfing down the sand at high speeds at the golden hour with the giant sunlight reflecting off the sand, it is gorgeous and amazing. However, there's extended periods, minor spoiler here, there's like a 5-minute segment of this game where you literally do nothing but climb slowly uphill into a blizzard until you stop and freeze to death. And that's just the game. It's not fun while you're doing it. And it reminds me of an art film, something that can be boring and tedious while you're doing it, but when it's over with, you're extremely glad you had the experience, right? I guess the other big thing here is when people say art in video games, you hear about this and you also hear about Dear Esther. So
yes.
For comparison, I know Daphne already covered
it. She did.
But these are nothing alike. Dear Esther is a linear narrative where it's a narrative chopped into pieces, walk forward, hear parts, walk forward, hear parts. This is completely experiential. It's a place that you go, and it's a place you'll remember forever. But while it is only 2 hours long at most, but weirdly, I want to play it again. Even though while I was playing it, I was like, this is boring and slow. But there are those brief moments of terror that you run into. There's the excitement of being able to run free. But then there's a lot of nothing. There's a lot of walking in the desert. So the only question is, and this is another thing that makes it like art, is $15 for a 2-hour experience, is that too expensive? Is that what art deserves to be paid? It's going to be up to you guys. But I'm very happy I had the experience, and if I could, I would probably go back and play it again. However, I did spend 5 freaking minutes walking upward in a snowstorm just to die, and it was not fun.
That kind of reminds me of a lot of the slower moments in other games that are out there. Like, I feel bad saying this, but in Uncharted 3, when Drake is lost in the desert for a while, I was like, really? You're going to walk this slow?
This is a whole game of that stuff.
I don't want to give any spoilers, but even at the end of another recent game I played where there was some slow walking involved at the end, I was like, just go faster, just do it. So I understand where you're coming from. It happens sometimes, but if you build a whole game around that kind of feeling, that kind of dynamic,
right?
So
obviously in the score we sort of give a buy or don't buy thing. This is one that's going to have to be your judgment call. If you're somebody who wants to see what video games aspire to be, mm-hmm. and you're willing to take that $15 risk for something that's 90 minutes of walking frozen in the snow, then go ahead and take the jump. I suspect you'll be really happy. But if you're somebody who says I want my game so I can kick butt and take names, maybe this won't be for you. However, it is gorgeous, and it's really a showcase of what kind of novel gameplay. I've never seen anything like it.
So do you think we need another category for games like this?
No.
Are they still, they're video games, but is there a new kind of genre that we should be calling this?
Look, that's the problem we have with video games right now, as it is they're all too fractious. You got, I'm RPG, I'm FPS, I'm some category I just made
Ooh,
up.
Sub-Zero in chat room said an art house game.
Oh,
I kind of like that.
It is an art house game.
I kind of like
fine.
That.
We get its own category. It's an art house
we'll
game.
Call them that from now on.
Done and done.
Thank you. So I finally got through Mass Effect 3. So there's going to be some spoilers.
That's not a good sign when you say, I got through.
Well,
you
I didn't mean that.
I triumphantly finished it. It's like, This was the
fastest I went through a game I wanted to take my sweet-ass time with.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like I wanted to be done by the time we got here to record this show because, we did a review up to a point last week, and I hadn't had time to finish the game. I wanted to explore everything there was to explore, but the ending gave people so much angst and so much frustration and anger that I wanted to get there. I wanted to be able to talk about it with people.
So do we need a spoiler alert drop?
I think we need a spoiler alert. There is a spoiler alert. If you haven't finished Mass Effect 3, we are going to talk about the ending right now. So just stop listening for a little bit.
As well,
mute the audio on the stream, whatever. When you see us, go to the next section. You'll know that we're not talking about it anyway. So I have to say right off the bat, and I tweeted about this when I finished the game, I didn't hate my ending.
Not the
while
most
I was playing.
Endorsement.
Well, I'm saying that because so many people hated the ending. Like, oh, I hated the ending. Internet rage face, So I wanted to put it out there like that it did not make me feel that way.
Right.
I did not immediately feel any kind of like really big feeling of loss and frustration or anger at the ending that I noticed
that you said, I didn't hate my ending. Do you mm-hmm. feel like you played it better? Do you think some of the rage is people didn't play certain things right and that's why it's so frustrating?
I think part of the frustration is that the endings you can get are all very similar.
Okay.
So I say my ending. I chose the middle ending, the synergy ending between biotics and synthetics and Why can't organics?
Organics. There you go.
Thank you. There's so many icks in the game.
Sure.
It's hard to remember sometimes.
It's a very icky game.
No, not really. So I chose the middle round. So they combined, but apparently the other endings, which I did watch on YouTube, are very similar. Also, it's not that big of a difference. There's a lot of plot holes that you kind of come across when you hit the ending. There's things like, for example, you lose the ability to use the mass relays, so you can no longer do travel between the galaxies. And so then suddenly all the aliens that are helping you defeat all the other aliens that are helping you defeat the Reapers at the end of the game, they're stuck in the Milky Way. They're stuck in your system now.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of the aliens in the game, they don't eat human food. They can't live in our environment. So in one way, that's not a good ending for that. Also, the mass relays are closed down, and we learned through earlier stories within Mass Effect, within the Mass Effect universe, that when the mass relays explode, they take out everything with them in that galaxy. So it was basically like a holocaust in a lot of ways. So I brought along an intergalactic like destruction of every people, life everywhere, and that just doesn't fit in with the storyline, really.
This is the ending you didn't hate.
This was the
was that you were okay with the destruction of the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, I was asking people why they were so angry at the ending, and these are just some of the reasons I got: the plot hole issues, the endings being too similar. All the choices that you seem to have made throughout the game don't seem to really matter that much at the end.
I'll tell you.
No matter how you play, it doesn't have that big of an effect.
Yeah, I could totally imagine the rage then. In fact, that's why I ended up hating Homefront, was because they would have this deus ex machina that showed up at the end of every level, rendering useless everything I had just fought for.
Yeah.
And if that's what happens at the end of Mass Effect, I can imagine being gypped.
Also, the weird godchild at the end was really kind of you took me out of the moment a little bit. But otherwise, I was so wrapped up in all the action and the, you know, everything coming together at the end. I was not really looking for those things at the time. I was kind of absorbed in the story and what was happening and excited about being at the end. And it wasn't until I went back later and started talking to people that I started getting that little seed of frustration of being like, oh, it would have been really great
if
Shepard had that you know, triumphant ending of destroying all the Reapers, and then she goes and lives in a cottage with Tally for the rest of her life, and blah, blah, blah. They make little alien baby children.
So, in the spirit of buy or don't buy.
Speaking of which, I did not get a chance to romance anyone either.
You romance it!
Oh, that's why you're frustrated.
That's why I'm frustrated, you betcha.
Get your hugs and kisses.
I didn't get my Garrus time. I wanted my Garrus time, but no.
You're the only other person I met who's romancing Garrus.
I tried!
Are in love with
we
Garrus.
Went and we shot stuff off the, you know, in the Citadel, and that was awesome. We had some bonding.
You guys
but
shot
because
guns.
It was because I didn't import my character from my last game because I went from PC to Xbox.
So, in the spirit of buy or don't buy, someone like me who's invested, you know, maybe a third of the way in, am I just going to, if I'm ultimately just going to be frustrated, is it continue to play or don't continue to play?
I can't say that. I have to say that cumulatively, it was an amazing experience, and it was a fantastic game. I had a blast playing it, and the story's incredible, and the gameplay is incredible. Everything that I liked about it in our last review, I still believe, and I still feel very strongly about. The ending, you know, there's never a good ending to this kind of thing, I feel like. I mean, even the guys over at Revision 3 for Destructoid and New Challenger,
I saw that.
They did a hilarious skit where we're never satisfied with how, like, shows like that end. You know, with Lost or with, you know, anything else out there, basically.
Battlestar, of course.
Thank you. I was trying to get that one in my head. We're never satisfied, and I think there's a lot of good reasons why people are not satisfied with the end. It didn't ruin my overall gameplay
experience. Maybe you should go through playing and take more time to stop and smell the Garrus while you can.
Yes! Stop and smell the Garrus. I love it. Mass Effect 3 is available now for $59.99 on PS3, Xbox, and PC, and the From Ashes DLC is also available for $10, which I found finally, by the way. Finally got that thing rolling. I had to re-download it, and then it worked.
What?
The download didn't, like, take or something. So I was flying around everywhere, like going to the planets where I knew he was.
And then when you finally got the DLC. Yeah, and one more last comment on it. It's like, of course, the big controversy is the zero-day DLC. Did you feel like it was a game ruiner if you played without it or anything?
No.
It's a minor deal?
It was. I mean, it maybe would have had some effect had I gotten it earlier in the game, but I really waited almost until the very ending of my story to go grab him.
It's like by the time he shows up, you're like, oh, Prothean, great.
Listen,
why don't you hang out in the back of the ship?
Yeah,
we're going to save the galaxy, all right?
Yeah.
Hey, you know what sucks about sports? Everything. You know what would make them suck less? If they included murder, explosions, and flying brooms like the fake sports video games we talk about in this week's Leak Sheet. All right, guys, the best fake sports video games. Number 5,
Mutant League Football, a game surely created in the most fevered moments in the mind of a surely sweaty Al Davis. It's a fairly basic skin of a standard American football game, replacing human players with monsters of all varieties. The real fun came from hazards like landmines and fire pits, as well as a ton of random crap on the field like ice blocks and toxic waste. What's more, you could openly bribe the ref once per half to call totally BS penalties on your opponents. Also, you could trigger special dirty plays designed to maim and murder your adversary. Just win, baby! But also, if you have time, leave the other guy's organs on the field. Number 4, Looney Tunes Basketball. A cross between White Men Can't Jump and Space Jam. What's not to love about Looney Tunes Basketball? Sure, the game treats interior defense with the same respect the Roadrunner pays to physics. Every single play is either a dunk or a dunk or a dunk. Your only hope to get ahead is by stealing the ball mid-court or picking off a pass and taking it the other way. Anyone who shoots a jump shot in the game is dumber than the guy who keeps extending Wile E. Coyote's credit at Acme. Number 3, Speedball. What would happen if you took rugby, armored the players, enclosed the field, and played with a metal sphere that could bounce off the walls? Speedball. Another game that valued violence over sportsmanship, points are scored either by putting the ball in the opposing goal or injuring members of the other team. What's awesome about Speedball is that it's cold, calculating, and simple enough to be plausible in a cyberpunk universe. Imagine if we lived in a world where even the most catastrophic injuries could be healed with nanites. Wouldn't you love to see a game where your least favorite player had a chance to get his back broken? Of course you would. Harry Potter Quidditch World Cup. All right, seriously, stop. Stop laughing. All of you. All of the games we've talked about have been rough equivalents to other established games. Quidditch, although certainly owing debts to rugby and soccer, is a completely invented sport with a lot of unique concepts. Not the least of which is airborne gameplay, bringing a completely different dynamic to passing, striking, and the defense. There are 3 suspended goals instead of a traditional one, and of course, the snitch. In World Cup, once a certain momentum is achieved, you can change play from chaser to seeker and try to catch the elusive flying gold ball. Catching it gives the team 150 points and ends the game. It's enough to erase a massive debt, but not every lead. If you're losing by 160 points to catch the snitch, you still lose. See? You're warming up to it, aren't you? Mischief managed. Twisted Metal. There is no sport that needed more of a makeover than the Demolition Derby. Sounds awesome on paper. A bunch of rednecks ram their cars into each other until only one's running. The reality? After a really fast start, things tend to settle into one of 3 barely functioning jalopies denting each other's fenders for 30 minutes until they run out of gas. Twisted Metal gave us what we've always wanted. Huge maps, insane weapons, awesome vehicles, and carnage. Sweet, supple carnage. Sure, there have been a billion different racing games that value precision and turning and acceleration, even some that coupled that with knocking enemy racers back into the pack. This boiled it down to a simple essence that lives in anyone who's ever been to one or more state fairs: wanton destruction on the grandest scale possible. I long for a day when this is reality. I can smell the fried dough now.
So I don't know if they ever made a video game out of it, but there was a tabletop game I used to love called Blood Bowl. Did you ever see that from Games Workshop?
No.
It was had a grid that was a football field, and you had like orcs versus humans, and, and you were able to cast spells, and you had like
awesome.
A ruler to indicate how far, and you rolled dice to see if you'd nail it or not. I love that game.
My favorite thing is that the chat room was like trying to figure out what number one was going
to
be.
They were getting ready to riot.
They were getting ready to riot, and then they saw it was Twisted Metal, and they were like, we didn't even know we wanted this, but we're so excited that this is the first one. So thanks to everyone who helped populate this list on our subreddit at twitgameon.reddit.com, specifically Fat Batman, Dark Demon 42, Bob Cali 99, and Trivially Travis. But if you think they're full of it, tweet what we missed to at twitgameon on Twitter.
I love that you were able to say all those names without
Trivially
smirking.
Travis.
That was very good. Man Alive, this episode has just flown by, but we have a ton more hooch headed your way, Boss Hog. Veronica and I sit down with Felicia Day of the Guild to talk about the enjoyment and creation of video games you know and love, and we'll hear some big announcements as well. Plus, we talk to the mad geniuses behind Draw Something and Demonstrate the Game with the help of Romany Malco from the 40-Year-Old Virgin, Weeds, and FX's Unsupervised. But first, we have to deliver you a message so important, somebody paid us to say it.
This episode of Game On is brought to you by Ford, featuring Curve Control. Curve Control is part of a whole suite of safety technologies on the 2013 Ford Taurus. It helps drivers maintain control of their vehicle when they're taking a curve too quickly. Here's how it works. Curve Control is always looking for potential problems by measuring how quickly the vehicle's turning versus how quickly you're trying to turn it. It pays attention to the roll rate, yaw rate, lateral acceleration, wheel speed, a steering angle, all this stuff I don't even understand. The point is, it runs 100 calculations every second. When When it finds a problem, it'll rapidly reduce engine torque, it'll apply four-wheel braking, it'll slow the vehicle up to 10 miles an hour in 1 second, and it works on dry or wet pavement. Curve Control helps protect you while driving on curves, and it's one of several new driver assist technologies available on the 2013 Ford Taurus. You can find out more at Ford.com/cars/Taurus.
All right, well, you know our guest today from a million amazing projects such as The Guild, Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, Dollhouse, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
We could just keep on going for another 30 minutes straight.
A very, very long time.
Straight for the IMDb.
The wonderful, the fabulous Felicia Day. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Hey. So we both just got back from WonderCon. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what we announced there, what you announced there especially?
Yeah, we had a panel that was very, very packed, that where I got to announce what has put the bags under my eyes, which is a brand new YouTube channel. It's called Geek and Sundry, and we posted a trailer, and we talked about the 6 brand new shows we're going to be having on the channel starting April 2nd. So it was really cool to get it over with and announced so it doesn't have to be a secret anymore.
Yeah, we haven't covered tabletop gaming too much on the show, even though I think a lot of our viewers might be interested in that. Can you tell us about Will's show, Will Wheaton's show?
Yeah, so there's a show called Tabletop, and I went to Will when I was pitching the slate to YouTube, and I was like, hey, would you like to do a show? And I was talking about a little bit about D&D, and he said, let's do a show about tabletop gaming, which he's really passionate about, and he's been doing for, you know, over 20 years now. So this is like a 30-minute YouTube show where he plays tabletop games with other people. And, you know, I'm not necessarily, I wasn't a board game player before we started this show, but I played a little bit just on iPad, and that actually got me hooked more into the actual show itself. So because a lot of these games are being transferred to iPad, and casual gamers are finding them, and then I think people are kind of reverse discovering them as a social activity. So I'm really excited about the show because every week 4 people will get together and play a different game every week of this sort of Catan and Pandemic and Dragon Age RPG. So it's a big variety of games.
So Felicia, you obviously are one of the pioneers of new media entertainment, especially scripted entertainment. I have to imagine that you get a lot of people who want to get in on this this opportunity, I guess would be the best way to put it. Do you tell people, like, has the window passed? Is it too late for somebody to get started? What advice do you give to somebody who's trying to break into the new media?
I mean, I personally think there's no better time to be breaking in right now. If you see, my channel is part of a YouTube initiative where they funded about 100 channels to do slates of programming under certain verticals and sort of types of content. But at the same time, Hulu is invested a ton of money and more high budget TV-like shows, and there's rumors about Amazon getting into original content, and of course I work with Microsoft on The Guild, and I know they have a bunch of things on the horizon video-wise. So right now is the best time in the world to be making video, because you can be making it wherever you live, you can be uploading it to fans wherever you know they are, and you could find an audience. It's, you know, there is a lot of content out there, but if you're making something that's unique and touches, you know, something in people to watch, you can find something without the middlemen that have been kind of plaguing us for a long time now. So it's literally the best time ever to create something, I think.
So season 5 of The Guild, I know, is going to be on Geek and Sundry as well. Are you adding any new content to that, or are you just going to replay the episodes?
Yeah, for The Guild, we actually are editing all the episodes of seasons 1 through 4 into movies. It's similar to what we have on Netflix, but it'll be in high definition, and we'll be doing like an annotated gag reel. So like every episode section will have like click out to new gag reel that nobody has ever seen. In addition, that I'm crazy, but I'm going through and like annotating every 8 seconds is a little behind the scenes footage.
Wow.
For all those. I don't know. You know what? It never needs to be easy. Felicia, that's literally what I'm going to be doing after I leave right now, doing season 4. And then every episode of season 5 will have an extra 5-minute behind the scenes movie. And then we'll upload that as a movie at the end as well. So, and you know, on launch day, we might have a little surprise for everybody. But I wanted to actually, you know, I wanted to release everything in a new way that Guild fans would enjoy. So they'll watch something and get something from it they don't even have, even if they have the DVDs.
On that same subject, is there any spoilers you can give us for any teasers for season 6?
I could just say that, you know, I've been very swamped with Geek & Sundry right now. And so that after launch on the 2nd, I will definitely be turning my eye to it. I have a story and some of the logistics are being worked out. So I'm fully intending on continuing, and we'll see where it ends up. Everything ends up.
You've been working on a lot of gaming-related content recently, from Dragon Age Redemption to, of course, voicing a major character, a companion in Fallout New Vegas. What draws you to this kind of work, and is there anything else you can tell us that's coming up soon?
I'm just so incredibly lucky to have people who like what I do, who do make the things that I love. So when somebody calls me up from one of these companies that I literally have been a fan of since I was like, you know, 10 years old, I'm just like jumping up and down inside. It's a big difference from when I was an actor and just kind of waiting for somebody to hire me. Like, I'm literally working with some of the people I've admired almost all my life. So to be able to work on Fallout, which is like one of my favorite games as a kid, and then Dragon Age, you know, I've romanced every character in Dragon Age Origins and number two. So, and you know, I'm a huge BioWare fan. I mean, Baldur's Gate was like my obsession when, you know, when I was younger. So, I mean, I love games, and I love being out there and be able to work in them. It's literally a dream come true for me. And it's something that just literally my hard work has, I guess, paid off with that dream coming true. Yeah, so hopefully I'll do more in the future.
On that same subject, I mean, you're so busy making games, you have any time to play games anymore?
I mean, listen, the trauma. I was in, I've been in Vancouver for 2 weeks, right over the Mass Effect launch. I was doing an episode of Supernatural that will be out in a couple months. And basically, it was agony. It was absolute agony to know that I could be home playing and I was working instead. So, you know, I've gotten a little bit spoiled. I know what's going to happen, but I can't wait to finally dig into that. But really, you know, I've been playing a lot of casual games on my laptop when I travel. So I'll download something through Steam, like I just played through Trine 2 and, like, you know, little games like Dungeons of Dreadmoor or, like, you know, Realm of the Mad God, I think. I was playing that on just through a browser. So literally I'll just pick a little casual game and play it if I have an evening off. To be able to get my fix before but I did do 120 hours of Skyrim.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know you played a metric crap ton of Skyrim, so that
can't
be totally
it. Try
true.
To deny it, Day.
Her blacksmithing is like through the roof.
But that, you know, that was not gaming. That was, I needed to do that.
It was
that
smithing. Wasn't a hobby. It's different.
It's work, darn it.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So I know you have a long and sordid history with World of Warcraft. I know, you know, the guild isn't necessarily based off of World of Warcraft, but you've lost a lot of your life to it, as have many of us here in the audience and in the studio. What's your relationship like with World of Warcraft? Do you know if any of the developers are big guild fans? Are there any little Felicia gems hidden in the game anywhere?
Oh, I mean, after season 2, I think they invited us down for a tour, and we got to tour around, and they gave us, like, literally they carted out a dolly of swag for us during the whole cast. And, you know, that got Jeff Lewis, who plays Vork, playing. I mean, he has a max level warrior, and he was just like Vork in the game, which is kind of scary. So, you know, and definitely we've been to almost every BlizzCon. Actually, we've been to every BlizzCon since 2007. So we definitely are supported by them in a way that they've helped spread the word of the show and let us come down to, you know, sign things during BlizzCon. And everybody I've ever met over there is amazing and just so friendly. And that's what I love about, you know, when you meet people who work for game companies, they are just so genuine, and they so obviously love what they do. It's even more so than if you meet people who do movies. You know, these guys are in it because they love games. They love playing games. They love making games. And, you know, Blizzard is no exception to that.
That's awesome. So obviously, just to wrap things up here, I know a ton of your time is being taken up by Geek & Sundry, but is there any other appearances you can tease right now, voiceover work, TV stuff coming up, in all your infinite free time that I'm sure you have?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just did an episode of Supernatural, and then I'm Eureka season 5 actually premieres on April 16th, and I am definitely in that episode and in the season. So that'll be a lot of me toward the end of April on TV, and then tons of me on Geek & Sundry starting April
tons
2nd.
Of you. You're going to gain weight just to have more of you out there.
Yeah, so you're all over Twitter.
I know. I'm sorry. Sometimes I like to apologize. I'm sorry, Internet.
I'm sorry. I'm here. It's too much me. I understand.
So you're on Twitter at Felicia Day. You've got Geek & Sundry on Twitter as well. Your website is FeliciaDay.com, GeekAndSundry.com for all the new show stuff as well.
Yep, that right there. It's a brand new website.
That about cover it?
You covered it, B.
All right, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out of your insanely busy schedule.
Okay, thanks for having me. Bye.
Bye. All right, there's a lot more to come, but first we have to take some time to thank one of our sponsors that makes this show possible.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. Squarespace.com has an easy-to-use UI for creating and managing a website or blog. Plus, it's optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. They recently created a developer-friendly CSS editor that allows you to pop out the entire window in full screen, colorize code, undo, find, and replace. There are hundreds of design templates to choose from, and you can customize any of the designs to fit your needs. They recently added 13 new template redesigns with 85 new style options and 2 brand new templates. There's tons of online resources and a special support team to give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com and sign up for a free account. Make sure to use the offer code GAMEON3 to get 30% off your new account for the next 3 months. That's GAMEON and the number 3.
So in all my excitement, I forgot to mention that myself and Tom Merritt of Twit fame as well.
Big news.
Are doing, we're doing a video version of our sci-fi fantasy book club and podcast, Sword and Laser, on Geek and Sundry. So we're going to be continuing to do the audio podcast, but also doing a video version that's going to alternate every Friday with Will Wheaton Show.
You're burying the lead. That set is amazing.
We're very excited, and I can finally
they
talk about
actual
it.
Actual real dragons
set.
And actual, they have actual swords and actual lasers on set.
It's going to be so cool. I'm so excited.
Unless you've been hiding under a rock, you know that Draw Something has taken the world by freaking storm. But in case you've never heard of it, me and Veronica demoed the game with our friend Romany Malco. You might remember him from Weeds, the new FX animated series Unsupervised, or The 40-Year-Old Virgin. When we taught the word that you don't... when he taught the world that you don't put the P word on a pedestal. I realized that was what I was about to say. Let's take a look.
I'm on to yours now.
All right, here we go. Talk it through.
Okay, here we go. Tap to guess. And let's see. Okay. Okay, I'm seeing some stringy hair. And some really big, unattractive eyes. And I'm seeing a dress. She's dressed like an... Whoa, what is that? Oh, my God. This has got to be... This is easy. Amy Winehouse. This is easy. How do you... Oh, this... D-O-T. Correct. Polka dot.
Woo! All right. I'm about to try to solve the one you just sent me, Rom.
Okay, I don't think it's going to be that hard. That's my opinion. Of course, I would say that, but, you know.
Of course, you did instantly guess Amy Winehouse when you saw polka dots. All right, here we go. All right, we got the head of a dude, stick figure guy. He's, I always look down at the letters early on. AEGNNNOPPPRTZ. Oh, yeah. My God. It looks like you drew a big dong and then erased it. Romany, I've watched you recreate a stick figure guy 3 times now. I got nothing to go on here.
I know. You got to give me a minute. You know.
I got it. Pregnant. That's pregnant. Very good. Boom. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I love the look of the mom.
I hate TMZ. I love celebs. I hate TMZ. This is obviously a person. Okay. Here it is. Are you ready? I'm going to go with... P-E-R...
Yay!
P-E-R-E-Z. There you are. Bow!
Nice. Well done.
Thank you. Nice job.
God, you're so good at the drawings. I'm looking at your awesome portrait of a dude.
Oh! The what?
Oh, wait. Did I... God damn it. Did I just say it without even saying... Holy cow. All right, you're clearly the winner. Screw this. I'm done recording. I declare you champion. Congratulations, Belmont.
Yay!
And now let's talk to two of the men who made the game happen. Garrett Peek is the lead designer at OMG Pop, and Joseph Almanali is the community director. Hey, guys, how you guys doing?
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah. Great to be here.
Dude, you guys, I think it was Garrett wrote me before the game even released saying, hey, I got this game. We're really excited about it. Maybe you could feature it on NSFW sometime. I was unprepared for the cultural phenomenon this thing has become.
Oh, my goodness.
And you were nice enough to send us over some interesting statistics. You guys say there are 2,000 to 3,000 drawings per second with peaks even higher than that at all times. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah, it started out, I remember we were super excited when we were getting 10 drawings per second. And our CEO sent out an email. He said, you guys made this. We're getting 10 drawings per second. And each day, it just started building and building. And just this last week, we got up to between 2,000 to 3,000 a second with peaks higher.
And so
we were just blown away.
At this point, you guys have 30 million installs, 1.7 billion drawings, and the average guest time is 86 seconds. But there was one fact that was my favorite to find out, which was the most failed word. Which one was that one?
Or actually. Or,
like O-A-R, no. Like a paddle,
yeah,
right.
Not like or that you'd mind for, yeah, but or that you like kind of like paddle.
Like a paddle, yeah, a boat, yeah. Or.
Right.
Are you able to see like what the, I guess, fin is what they're guessing? Like, I would love to know what the mistaken guesses are, which, by the way, this looks more like a banana and a lollipop than a boat and an oar in this case.
That's lovely. So when did it occur to you guys that you might have a massive success on your hands?
I mean, I don't think anyone here saw it coming. I mean, this is just, this is the abbreviation of like one of our, like, you know, a couple of our older games. Like, we have Draw My Thing on our Wavemade website and our Facebook game. And this was, I think we expected this to be a really fun game. But I mean, at what point was it that we feel that was just going to be like.
I think, so this is our second main push for a mobile game. And our first mobile game, it took a while to get past 1 million downloads. And this one, very quickly passed 1 million downloads, I think within the first week. And then we actually saw the graphs for the analytics and it started to become a bell curve. And within the first 2 weeks, or within the first week, we were just like, this is crazy.
Now,
this is craziness.
On that subject, since you guys were unprepared for the level of success that you achieved, was there ever a point where you were worried about the system being able to scale? Did the servers ever go down? Was there ever a full-fledged panic?
We probably have the hardest working back-end team I've ever met.
Yeah.
They came in and worked day and night.
No sleep, literally. Big shout-out to Chris and Jason Crash to Burn. Just amazing guys, I swear to God. They've got no sleep for days handling the massive influx of drawings and traffic to the game.
But where do you think the success came from? Do you think it was just being in the right place at the right time? Do you think it was a really great PR move? I mean, or is it just totally unexpected?
It is about 100 things working at once. It's a game that we had previously that we knew was a fun social experience. We had it on OMG Pop, and then we had it on Facebook, and we're like, we know this is fun. How can we bring it to mobile? So once we brought it to mobile, we had to tweak it quite a bit, and we iterated a lot. We prototyped a lot. We refined it to try to make the gameplay as fun as possible. The thing that I think surprised us the most was that you can make the best game that you can given what you know and your tools and your resources, and you do your best job putting it out, but it's become like a cult hit almost. And I say that based on the sharing that we're seeing and based on the stuff that people are posting, like memes and stuff. And I think where that comes from is that it's unique for each person that plays.
Like, right.
You guys just demoed a game that you guys played individually, and he was drawing pregnant, but you know, it came out of something else, and other people had.
It's a very modest way to put it.
I'll keep it PG. But other people have in jokes, so it's like peanut butter for me may mean like the name of my dog, or is for someone else it may be, you know, something. Some funny experiences they had with their friend.
Right. It all comes down to that personal ability to express with your friends. So it's just like, you know, it's what you just don't get from some other games where you just can kind of have this one-to-one personal expression that just between like you and the other person, and that makes it special.
I know go ahead.
And the thing about that scales is the fact that since you're drawing symbols and icons and it's something that everyone does from a very young age, I mean, the interface was made in a way to where we kind of put everyone on the same playing field. No one got special tools. No one got crazy, awesome, you know, circle makers and square makers. So everyone's kind of on a level playing field, drawing with their finger on the touchscreen so that it becomes a universal drawing experience.
I know it's not technically correct to use words in when you're doing the drawings, but I went through a thing where I tried to draw Vegas was the answer, and it looked stupid. Every single time I drew it, it looked stupid. It didn't make any sense. It was like a weird lion and like a pyramid, and I was like, this is dumb. So for my boyfriend, I just wrote, "We hate this place." And he got it instantly. And I was like, see, it's that kind of thing. You know, you have little inside jokes with people, and then they kind of get it that way. But what have been some of the most common requests that you guys have gotten from players in terms of, like, features or things they want added?
One of the top things is actually, in the game, when you can keep going back and forth and you get successful guesses, you can build up a streak. And one of the biggest things people ask for is, like, a streak beyond 99. When we were making this game, we never thought that so many people would reach, like, you know, 99 consecutive turns without getting anything wrong. It's pretty insane. People get pretty passionate about it. But besides that, people are asking for chat, and if they keep into consideration whether people will cheat using chat, well, they definitely will. We're also more like they want a gallery so they can save their drawings. And all that stuff's coming up. So we're listening very closely to what people want. Very important to us, the community. And so we're really excited about all of the features we have coming up for the game. Very excited.
So I got to imagine you guys are very closely monitoring who mentions it on Twitter or on Facebook or shares individual drawings out there. Who are you most surprised to find out plays draw something? And did you ever have like a giddy fanboy moment?
Oh, Man versus Food was probably the one that
wow.
Was,
nice.
Because like,
Adam,
oh my God, I still watch this guy, Adam Richman, right?
I think, I forget his last name. No, Adam Chat Room.
That's right, yeah.
Chat room will tell us shortly.
He'll have it in there in about 3 seconds. But any plans for the future? You got any other games in the works?
We actually have a lot of fun games and that are being built right now speak.
Streets on Facebook. We're really excited about that.
Yeah, we have a Facebook game coming out. Wu-Tang Clan was actually in our office last week.
Wow.
I noticed you had some Wu-Tang answers. I've hit upon Wu-Tang people as answers before.
Yeah, we try to plug in things that we like a lot and pull into our games, and we figure if we have fun with it, other people have fun with it.
Absolutely.
But our main focus now is mobile. Mobile is an amazing platform. Angry Birds and Words with Friends have really set up this template and this idea to where people are getting on their phone specifically now to look for games. And I know Brian has been you guys were arguing whether the iPad versus the new PlayStation mobile device would win in the long run, and I got to side with Brian on this one because
you're banking on iPad.
But whenever there's a face-off between platforms, it's whoever has the games wins. And I'll tell you, as long as we have successes like draw something for the iPad, I got to think that's going to weigh in its favor.
So, guys, I hate to do this to you, but I have a question. So I've been playing for a really long time, and I bought a lot of color packs with my coins that I've been winning, and they go away. I don't have any of my colors, and I keep logging in and out and trying to get them back, and now they just won't come back at all, and I'm really sad. I'm trying to tell a colorful story here.
your colors, your coins, your bombs, they're all safe. What's going on in the game is just having a little trouble like grabbing, looking at your inventory, but we're on that right now. We should have this solved really soon.
Sweet.
All of your coins and colors are safe. We have that all saved. It's just making the calls, since we're getting millions and millions of calls, second,
I was convinced for a second you were going to say all of your coins belong to us. thank you guys so much. Where can people find Draw Something?
They can find it the number one spot on iTunes and Android marketplaces. And before we go, I'd love to just give a shout out to Joshua, our CEO's son. He's not feeling well now. We love you, Josh. Hope you feel better. You know, he's a big fan of your show. So there you go.
Right.
Thanks for having us.
Feel better,
awesome.
Dude.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
I can't believe that you wrestled him down for tech support.
You gotta take it where you can.
Okay, fair enough.
You gotta just get things fixed, you know?
Draw Something is amazing. All of you should get it on all platforms right now.
Yes, there's a free version, there's a paid version, and I have the paid version, but the free version is also awesome.
Yeah, no, in fact, I've been using the free version, not realizing that my missus had already bought the paid version.
So we are about to shut this thing down, but after the lights go out on Game On, it's time to shut up and play. The LAN party where the staff of Game On plays anyone who dares. But who hosts the show? Who produces it? Why, it's Glenn Rubenstein, of course. What's going on, Glenn?
Hey, thanks, Veronica. So tonight, Sunday, March 18th, we've got a crazy show coming up. We're doing Trackmania Nations Forever, the free game, also Trackmania 2 Canyons. We're going to be doing a grudge match with You Don't Know Jack, and we're going to have a play date with Def Jam rap star It's going to be insane. I'm also going to be interviewing one of Sword's Dan Amrick about his new book about how you can get started reviewing video games. Coming up next week, though, Sunday, March 25th, we've got Team Fortress 2 once again in our quest to make Veronica the best Team Fortress 2 player she can be. If you want to see a training montage in action and get in on the action yourself, send an email to twitlandparty@gmail.com to RSVP. Next week, Sunday, March 25th, Team Fortress 2 here on the LAN Party. And if you stay tuned for the grudge match to see what the punishments are, sometimes things like this happen to Mr. Brushwood.
No. This is how you remind me. Oh, my God. You're killing me.
You're so... so pensive. This
is how you remind me. I love the double cap. I really am. That was awesome. Thank you so much. That was Glenn-tastic. Hey, guys, if you're in the market for a new gaming laptop or PC, then look no further than our friends over at Doghouse Systems. They are the company that provided us with the gaming machines we use during the LAN party, and we love them. We just wish we could make love to them. It's actually painful when I have
to go home. Speak for yourself, buddy. That sounds awful.
It's actually painful when I have to go home and use a slower computer. Physically painful. So when you are ready to level up, use the code GAMEON at checkout, and they will double your memory for free. Click on the banner ad at our Twit homepage to learn more about the Double Your Memory promotion.
All right, well, it's time to turn things over to Sir Chattington.
Lord Chattington of Chadsville.
What are people saying over on the Twitter nets?
Thanks. Ragnar apparently had a lot of fun for St. Patrick's Day. So he says, I'm so hungover, I thought Veronica was talking to me. Then I realized she wasn't. I'm going to go cry in a bottle.
Oh!
So poor old Ragnar.
Oh, Ragnar, I heart you. Also,
that's wow. Now you just made a dream come true. Now he's gonna go out drinking again to celebrate.
Now you are talking to him.
That's right.
It's right.
What it's Veronicaception.
Exactly. And then also, Chuckle J says at the end of Mass Effect 3, I was like, this is awesome. I don't know. Everyone was complaining about it. And then I was like, oh, I get it. So he was not too excited.
So he's on the same page as you.
The
yeah,
same,
he thought he liked it, but
the delayed
it turns out
reaction, the slightly delayed reaction. Like
it's
I
like
said,
PTSD.
I love the game,
it's like you think you're okay.
You start
but
you getting your
you
own
wake
head.
Up with nightmares. You're just like, oh, that sucks.
You got to get out of your head at the end of the game. There, you just got to let it happen. It was a video game. It's cool. Don't
awesome.
Worry about it.
And then finally, Patrick Delahanty asks, when Game On is someday turned into a platform adventure game, will Felicia Day be the bonus character available for pre-orders?
Heck yeah! Gosh.
Yeah. Alex Albrecht, too. He'll play Brian, flat-haired Brian, yeah.
Flat-haired Brian. But you're now flat-haired Brian.
I know. I pull off the mask. I'm Alex Albrecht.
Oh, that would be really bizarre. All right, well, thanks to Felicia Day, Garrett Peake, Joseph Almanawi, and Romany Malco, whose new movie, Think Like a Man, opens next month. Next week, we have Anthony Carboni from New Challenger and real-life video game props guy, Bill Doran.
So excited about this.
We'll see
this.
You guys then. I am,
dude,
too.
Dude, he is awesome.
Is so rad.
Bye-bye.
He makes the best stuff. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Dinosaur. All right, perfect. Thank you.
He had no idea what I was talking about. I was like, can you please walk the dinosaur? And he was like, what? And I was like, walk the, you know,
that?
Walk
what
the dinosaur.
I don't know.
And he was like, what? And I was like, you know, from the you know, it's... If you have to explain something to someone like that for too long, it just loses. It's funny, but I wanted to bring you guys back.
We should, and actually, it was not a joke, and it was not me pandering to say how much I love Wasteland 2. I don't know that we have to watch the whole thing, but can we pick it up from the end of the kid interview?
So from what I understand, Wasteland is a derivative of Fallout.
Actually, it was the other way around. We wanted to make a Wasteland 2, but we didn't have the rights, and that's why we made Fallout instead.
Interplay made Fallout 3? I love that game.
No, we made Fallout 1 and 2.
There was a Fallout 1 and 2?
Yes. So, can we make this happen?
Yes, we can. I'm excited about this, Brian. I'll get my legal team on this today, and we'll give you a call first thing tomorrow morning.
Hello? Hey, good to hear from you. So, are we going to finally get going on Wasteland? Yeah, I got your farm bill request. Yeah, but... no, sure, I'll feed your chickens. But what about the... it sounds like you have plenty of fertilizer. What about Wasteland? Oh, another direction? Okay, thanks.
Aww.
Yes, I got your Bejeweled request.
Yeah, hey, Brian. Yeah, it's Richard Cornwell for a Big Ass Games.
Big Ass Games.
Sorry.
Hey, we decided to move forward with Wasteland. Yeah, just a few tweaks. Let's do lunch. Perfect. All right, great. Okay, let's talk about a few minor tweaks.
All right, well, I don't want to stray too far from the original.
Oh, no. I mean, these are just tiny modernizations, if you will. Take, for instance, we would like it to be a first-person shooter.
Excuse me?
In our numbers people, they tell me romantic vampires are really big right now, and we feel like they would seamlessly fit into the Wasteland storyline.
Maybe we should use birds as weapons.
Ooh, that's good, that's good. I'm glad we're on the same sheet of music. What do you think the boots look like? Are they red? Because red is really big. Are you seeing red?
I'm definitely seeing red. So, in all seriousness, I've been wanting to make a Wasteland sequel for years. In fact, I'm hoping this sort of fan funding brings back a sort of genre of product that I love to play and I love to make. And, you know, to clarify what kind of game Wasteland 2 is intending to be, it's a turn-based, top-down role-playing game, and it's also party-based. So that is, you control a group of people rather than just one individual character. And you could also take them and split them up and put them in different places around the map, which allows a more tactical combat to go on. And anybody that's played that kind of game, they know how much fun that can be. I've also got a great team put together. Michael Stackpole, one of the co-creators.
Yeah, right?
Oh, sweet.
Also a best-selling author. We have the plot and storyline written by Jason Anderson. And Jason was one of the co-creators of Fallout. And then I have Mark Morgan, who did the music for Fallout 1 and Fallout 2.
Fallout 1 and 2 have amazing, haunting music.
That's great.
Wasteland 2. And in addition, there'll be other people coming aboard on the team that we'll be talking about. And I know this is a lot of money that we're asking for to make this kind of game, but, you know, to make a big, deep role-playing game, you know, they're not inexpensive. But I'll say that all of the money is going into the production of this, and I'm personally not going to be taking any money from Kickstarter myself, so that 100% of it goes into making it a better game. So this really might be the last chance for a Wasteland 2. I mean, this really didn't exist as an opportunity even a couple of years ago. But now with fan funding and digital distribution, that kind of changes everything. And it's frankly probably the best way of having this game made. So now, ultimately, it's up to you, the fans, on how badly you want to see this.
Take my money!
Shut up and take my money!
You know, thanks for listening.
I want to see if we have my picture of my... So this is
you and a femship.
Yes, she basically looks exactly like my.
Oh my God! Really?
My femship, and I saw her at WonderCon, and I ran over to her, and I was like, "Oh my God! I have to get a picture with you." And she's actually a really well known cosplayer. She was at I can't remember the name of the film now. The Comic-Con film that.
The documentary.
Yeah, the documentary from. I'm so tired. My brain is not working. No, the guy who made the documentary. Come on, chat room, help me out here. Yeah. Morgan Spurlock. Thank you.
There you go, Morgan
you
Spurlock.
You knew that.
I did know that. I held it back.
And her name is Holly Conrad. Yeah, that's it. And I found her on Twitter, and I was like, I have a big girl crush on you now. And she was like, yeah.